Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Dave Cushing. Today, we'll launch into this hour of the longest and probably the sunniest, at least locally, day of the year in a timely conversation with Dr. Jennifer Haley, who is a board-certified dermatologist at the Linder Dermatology and Skin Care Center in Scottsdale, Arizona. Dr. Haley writes a regular column in Fitness RX for Women magazine and will share with us learnings from her 15-year career, which also brings her to Park City during the summers.
That's right. And then we'll chat with Allison Page. She's the founder of Trail Talk. You've probably seen their sprinter vans around. They use those vans to go to the trailhead. It's a Park City-based psychotherapy practice whose therapists walk you, literally, through your life's challenges and issues by walking the trails with you. Instead of the couch or the overstuffed chair, imagine having therapeutic conversations while hiking up the Wow Trail. Wow, that sounds interesting, right?
Right, Lynn. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We will be back after these words.
G'day, it's Ian from Campos Coffee. Us Aussies really love a summer as much as we love supporting KPCW. We've got Nitro Cold Brew on tap, affogatos made with Wasatch Creamery ice cream, and Mamachari Kombucha made with our Cascara Coffee Cherry. Located above the ice rink at Park City Mountain Resort next to the Adirondack Chairs. CamposCoffee.com.
Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank Concierge-Style Executive Banking Services. Zions Bank. We haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my co-host, Dave Cushing.
Yeah, hello.
Well, in addition to the Dermatology Center where she works in Scottsdale, Dr. Jennifer Haley also has a practice office in Montrose, Colorado. And that's pertinent because I believe Montrose, Colorado may even be higher in altitude, which affects our dermatology. We'll get to that. Since 2004, her career has taken her down many paths in the field, which she writes about in Fitness RX for Women magazine. She has recent columns like 8 Ways to Banish Breakouts, Tips for Clear, Healthy Skin, A Guide to Winter Skin Health, How to Combat Seasonal Changes for a Healthy Glow, and many others. The mother of 2 young boys, she promotes safe sun exposure awareness to local schools and recently donated special UV protection sun hats to kids in her effort to educate and share her innate generosity of spirit. She also spends a good portion of her summers here in Park City, so we're lucky to have her joining us right here in the studio. Dr. Jennifer Haley, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. So is Montrose, Colorado higher in altitude than Park City? Do you know?
It's close. It's about 1,000 feet lower than it is here. But working in that area, I see people from all over, from Crested Butte, which is higher in elevation, and Telluride also. So I've really been able to see the effects of high altitude on skin over time. And it's been pretty impressive. I think what draws people to the mountains is the fact that they love the outdoors and all the activities that the mountains have to share. So we tend to select a group of people that love to play and work outdoors. So they're exposing their skin to quite a bit of sun. And I think living in Hawaii and living in the mountains, I've been more impressed with what the sun does to the skin in the mountains as far as being so elevated above ground, you're getting more radiation, more ultraviolet A rays, which are the deeper penetrating, more damaging, aging sort of rays over time.
Oh, okay, this is good. There are ultraviolet A rays and B rays?
There's A, B, and C.
A, B, and C. Talk about those.
Sure. C we tend to disregard because they usually get blocked by the ozone. B, I think of as the burning rays. And that's what SPF is based off of, is the UVB rays. So if you have an SPF of 30 or higher, you're blocking over 98% of the UVB rays. But there is no grading system for UVA rays. Oh. So you have to be smart and look at labels, almost like you look at nutrition labels. You don't just trust what they say on the front package. So you have to look at the label for a sunscreen and sort of be aware of what ingredients are going to block the UVA and the UVB rays. So I know as a dermatologist, and I try to explain this to my patients and my readers, that zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, both are not chemicals. They're innate substances that just physically block sun from the skin, are going to block UVA and UVB rays.
Okay, so interesting. So when we buy sunscreen, it always says good for UVA, UVB, but the UVA is only taken care of by a physical block. Is that what you're saying?
In a very good way. So the UVA can be blocked by chemical sunscreens, but what happens is the longer that you're in the sun, the more heat that hits the chemical sunscreens, the more they dissipate into the air and the less effective they become over time. Whereas a physical sunscreen that acts like a barrier to protect the skin is going to be active as long as it's on your skin.
I've heard over the years it's important to put your sunscreen on 30 minutes before you're exposed. Is that true or is that a myth?
With the chemical sunscreens, it is, because it needs to have a chemical reaction in your skin in order to prevent the damage that's going to occur when you get outside. But I'm more of a natural sort of doctor, so I tend to like the physical barriers that I know are not going to be absorbed in your skin, that are not going to come out in the news 20 years from now. So I feel like the zinc oxide and the titanium dioxide are the best way to go, and their effectiveness is dependent on how thickly you apply it.
All right.
So
sunscreen products have a shelf life typically? If you go in your closet and find something from a couple years ago, still okay to use? Or?
The chemical sunscreens tend to have more of a shelf life. Like I said, the sun, the heat, the light all kind of causes it to break down. Whereas, zinc oxide, titanium, not so much. They still have to put a date on it, just like prescriptions, but not so much. You can kind of, fudge it a little bit. But in actuality, if you're using it properly, it shouldn't be lasting that long anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we went on a beach vacation for spring break, and our kids, they think that the zinc oxide is just a really bad look for a person, especially a teenager who's trying to look cool. And so they call it, the geeky parent sunscreen, which we're fine putting on because we have damaged our skin over many, many decades. And now we've unfortunately, at this late age, we've wizened up to it. So I've seen before invisible zinc oxide. Is that a real thing?
There is, and there's a little bit of controversy because there can be some nanoparticles. But they can break the zinc down enough so that it can still form a barrier but not look white and not also get absorbed by your skin. There's a couple great brands out there, and what you're paying for when you're looking at a $10 sunscreen versus a $30 sunscreen is basically the cosmetic elegance. So, for my kids that are young, I want something water-resistant. I use a product called Vanna Cream, which you can get at most drugstores. If you go to Rite Aid and you can't find it, the pharmacist can order it over, they can order it for you, and it's about $10, $13. And that's very, very water resistant. I've run a couple marathons with it, didn't burn my eyes at all. But it's heavy. If you throw water on yourself, it will bead on your skin. So something a teenager is not going to want to wear, it's going to be too heavy, maybe make them feel greasy or, oily. So in those cases, there are sunscreens that are clear or weightless. PCA Skin makes a nice weightless one. L2MD is one of my favorite brands, and they make non-chemical sunscreens, the physical sunscreens that are lightweight. Some of them have niacinamide in them, which is an anti-inflammatory ingredient that can help for acne or patients that are predisposed to redness or rosacea, sensitive sorts of skin. So there's all sorts of things out there, and it's just about looking at the ingredients, making sure it has zinc oxide, SPF 30 or higher, and then something you're going to use, something that's cosmetically elegant for your skin type, whether you need moisture, you want something that's oil-free. I like the tinted sunscreens. That's all I wear. I just wear a tinted sunscreen. That's my makeup. That's my sunscreen. That's what I wear every day.
I like it. Okay. Yeah. This is all really good information. And again, that if you want an oil-free, because, you know, there is this thing when you put on that heavy zinc oxide and then you go hoofing it up, you know, Spiro Trail or wherever, and you're sweating a lot. It just feels kind of claustrophobic to have that really heavy sunscreen on. You feel like your skin's not breathing.
It's occlusive.
You know, if you're a teenager or something, you're worried about breakouts, you know. So that's when you get the oil-free?
Exactly. So you want to look for something oil-free. I mean, I used to say don't get anything at the drugstore, but the Neutrogena, Aveeno, all those companies who kind of come along, they've realized that the demand is out there to get something with zinc oxide, not just six chemicals, SPF 100 or higher, because you really don't need anything higher than an SPF 30 if you're applying it properly. And you you want to get the zinc oxide, but it has to be in an elegant formulation. So it's a little bit of trial and error. You know, ask your friends. Try some of the ones I mentioned. There's entire lists. The EWG, which is the Environmental Working Group, they make a nice list of chemical-free, sort of safer alternatives. There's just so many options out there anymore. You don't need to bear with that Saran wrap feeling. I've felt it before. It's just unbearable. You need to live with that.
Yeah. We posed some questions to our promotion list by email, and listener Carolyn writes in and wants to know about a recent report saying more people than ever have been using sunscreen, but cases of melanoma are up. First of all, is that true? And what's the prognosis for melanoma
Absolutely.
These days?
Yeah, so melanoma is really up. In 1900, it was about 1 in 1,200. Now it's about 1 in 60. 1 in 58 Americans will get melanoma. There's some evidence out there. I have my own theories. So a couple things. Number one, it's more trendy to show skin and be tan, obviously. So we're getting more sun over time. We're living longer. Outside activities are a sign of, you know, affluence and leisure time, as opposed to, you know, the royalty back in the 1800s, where it was trendy to have fair skin.
Because that meant you didn't work in the fields.
Exactly. And I also think things are being detected earlier. So things that might not have ever been seen before, that somebody died of old age, we're now finding and detecting as melanoma. But that's one of the reasons why I became a dermatologist. I was in San Diego doing a surgical oncology or cancer residency rotation, and we had a lot of patients with cancer. All of a sudden, I saw 20, 25-year-old gorgeous blonde people with melanoma. Zero horrible prognosis back in the 90s. They were no treatment, no chemotherapy. You either detect it early or that's it. There's nothing, no treatment for it. I said, I have to find all the melanoma in the world. I'm going to be a dermatologist. Mm-hmm. So I have to find it earlier and earlier. Now we do have some good chemotherapy. There is awareness. I think we're detecting it earlier and earlier. I find a lot of melanomas at its earliest stage where it's an in situ. It hasn't become invasive yet, and it's very treatable with just surgery. No need for chemotherapy, no need to check lymph nodes, no need for anything like that. So I think that the detection is better. I think also that when people use sunscreen and say they use sunscreen, they're getting a sense of false sense of protection. Mm. Instead of just covering like cowboys used to do with long sleeves, people are slapping a little sunscreen on their arms and they're not really covering themselves adequately. I think of sunscreen as a backup plan.
Is there a link, a known link between climate change and incidence of skin problems from the sun?
Yeah, I don't think there's a known link, but I think we all know that there's, you know, there's some sort of link, but nothing that's, you know, top priority to prove at this point.
Right. Well, that takes me to the ozone layer. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when my kids were really little, we went to New Zealand, and apparently the ozone, for whatever reason, is it all the sheep? I don't know, is thicker or thinner there, so you get more of the harmful rays. What's happening to the ozone layer now? You know, is it different over the Western U.S. than it was 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I was reading the same thing about New Zealand yesterday. I was doing a little bit of research for a potential trip there. And I was asked to work there for a short period of time, and that was a little frightening to me. You know, I mean, we all enjoy the outdoors. We want to get out there as much as possible. I truly believe in the benefits of the sun for our overall health and well-being. But, you know, where do we find that balance? It's always a challenge because I'm not one of those dermatologists that likes to yell at people and say, stay inside. I mean, I like to get out every day. I like to hike. So where do we find the balance of being practical and enjoying our life and getting the benefits that the sun has for us, but yet protecting ourselves as well? It's a really hard line to walk.
Right, right. So, you know, we've talked a lot about sunshine. Let's talk a little bit about those nasty breakouts that, you know, usually I think they're created, produced by hormones in teenagers. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been there. Our kids are going through it. But I have seen some miraculous recovery from acne, really bad acne. And is it really easy now to control? And how nasty are these medications that we're giving to teenagers?
Yeah. So when I trained in the 90s, I was trained that diet had absolutely no effect on acne. You know, we used to tell people, it has no effect. Well, after 15 or longer years of practicing, you know, I actually listen to my patients. And they'll be well controlled. They'll come back, well, you know, it was the holidays, I had a lot of sugar, and it's clear that they broke out from sugar, you know. So now we're actually trying to find that link, and we're noticing a link between things in the diet, things in the environment, and acne. So traditional teenage acne, you know, we've treated with topical medications like benzoyl peroxide, things you'll find in Proactive or over-the-counter in the Oxy products, and that reduces bacteria and inflammation in the skin. We can use topical exfoliating treatments like glycolic acid, vitamin A type products, salicylic acid. Those also help exfoliate, remove dead skin cells that will plug up the pores. And we also have used oral antibiotics over time, not because we're really treating a bacteria, but more because we're treating the inflammation that's there. So antibiotics work to reduce inflammation. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, are we setting people up for failure to respond to future infections? That's always a concern to me. So I've become less inclined to use oral antibiotics over time because of that. They still work. And if someone wants a quick fix for prom or some sort of a, you know, a wedding, I had somebody who was getting married, we'll use them for short periods of time because it will reduce the redness. But I have started educating my patients more and more to take autonomy and realize that, like, what you do in your daily life will either make acne worse or better. So fish oil is anti-inflammatory. That can help reduce the redness. And a lot of people with acne are oily. They don't want to have anything to do with oil. But the right types of oil can actually reduce inflammation. Avocado, nuts, fish oil, good types of oil. Now, things like processed pastries, sugars, things like that, they cause an insulin surge, high cortisol, high production of oil, and lots of redness and bumps and inflammation. So staying away from sugar, eating real foods, not in a package, is always a good way to go if you're trying to fight acne and breakouts. Those are the big things.
Well, let's switch to the aging population of the U.S. And here in Park City, there's a lot of old timers and a lot of older people who are moving here. What's the best way to keep your skin from the wrinkles and the windburn? And how do you treat skincare as you turn 50 and older?
So I'd say the biggest complaint I hear about from here is dry skin. And, you know, you can't fight Mother Nature. Mother Nature always wins in all regards, right? But two simple things that you can do to help your skin keep a protective barrier is, number one, minimize the amount of soap you use. So I find that people watch these commercials and they're sudsing everywhere. Well, our skin doesn't produce a lot of oil outside of, you know, the chest and upper back and the face. So using soap on the arms and legs where there's very little oil is actually going to pull out the natural oil from the skin and strip the skin of its healthy protective barrier. So I tell people just use soap or a cleanser under the arms, the groin, the feet, areas that actually produce scent. You're not going to produce scent from, you know, your arms and your legs. Just friction and lukewarm water is enough to help clean the skin. And then as soon as you get out of the shower, just coat head to toe in a moisturizing cream. A couple products on the market I like contain ceramides. Ceramides are a natural moisturizer in the skin that seal the skin cells together and help protect it. There is a product called CeraVe, C-E-R-A-V-E. There's Cetaphil, Restoraderm. Aveeno makes products with ceramides. And if you apply a ceramide cream to your skin head to toe, that's going to help with dryness before it gets to the point of eczema and itchy rashes and all that sort of thing that we deal with, especially in the winter. When I was working here last January, everybody had it. So very common complaint. Now on the face, you know, it's never too late to start doing the right things. I've seen people well into their 60s, very outdoorsy, you know, with pre-cancers, even cancers, and we catch up. We slow down things once you start doing the right things with your skin. So most people, I have this conversation every day. They go, I only wear sunscreen when I'm outside. Well, how many minutes a day do we spend outside walking to and from the car, to and from the mailbox, walking our dog? At least 10 minutes a day, right? 10 minutes a day, 1 hour a week, 50 hours a year. Would you go to the beach or New Zealand for 50 hours without wearing sunscreen, right? No. So it's the cumulative little things every day, just like the bite of cookie adds up and gains 10 pounds. It's the cumulative little effects of things every day that cause more of an effect on our life than those 1 week at the beach. So wearing sunscreen every single day before you leave the house, something you like, something that's elegant, that's something that you're not going to have to think about that's on your skin, is really going to make the biggest difference over time, more than anything else you can do.
How about the tinted windows in your car? Do they help?
They do. They do. So in Colorado, it's a really big deal because they don't let you tint windows. Arizona does. So I saw so many skin cancers on the left side of the face and the arms, exactly. Thanks.
Right.
He's pointing to his arms. So yeah, left, just the whole entire left side of the face, I'd say 70 to 80% of the cancers. And that just shows you the cumulative effect over time of every day, just driving in the car or waiting in traffic in Ridgeway or,
That is so interesting. Well, and I noticed, well, and as you look at your patients, do you see that overall the left side of the face has, I have way more wrinkles.
Always
on the left
more
side.
Crow's feet, everything. Yep.
So I actually do not know whether in Utah you can have tinted windows, but perhaps there's something that you can put on. I mean, are we in our car windows, is there, some sort of natural or some sort of tinting that they put in? I don't know. I just got a new car and I noticed that it looks a little different, and it made me wonder if now new cars are coming up with some kind of UV protection in their driver's side window.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think traditionally the windshield does have UVA, UVB protection, but the side window, that's the big thing about windows, is the UVB is going to be blocked. So it's the least deeply penetrating, but the UVA comes through. And there are some, you know, very famous pictures out there. There's one of a truck driver. I actually just posted it on my Instagram last week, of a truck driver who has been driving for over 20 years, and the left side of his face looks like a completely different person than the right side of his face, just from those UVA rays coming through. Secretary by the window working every day.
Yeah, DJ at the KPCW booth. Live. Let's talk a little bit about that truck driver. And is there any coming back from those wrinkles? You know, Botox, fillers, all that sort of thing. But, is there anything that's going to make an effect, much of a change?
I definitely think there's enough out there to make a change, whether it's cosmetically or medically. You know, cosmetically from a laser, you can do lasers and stuff like that to help resurface the skin with wrinkles. The skin's never going to look as good once you've gotten that sun damage. It's just not. And then from a medical perspective, there's lots of things out there you can do for pre-cancers and things like that. It's never too late. It's just never too late. Mm. There's, you know, as long as the body is healthy and the immune system is healthy, we have the ability to repair. So we just need to support that ability to repair internally through good nutrition, supplementation, and then externally by protecting the skin and giving it a chance to repair because it wants to. That's what our bodies are made to do.
Listener Rod from Round Rock, Texas writes in, and by the way, in Texas, the Texas tint is a huge thing on your car windows. He wants to know, what are the early warning signs of skin cancer?
Okay, great question. I'm so glad he touched on this. Thanks, Rod. And I know in Texas, it's so humid. It's you really want to get a good sunscreen that's going to stay on your skin when you're sweating, and that's not going to make you feel really occlusive. So the first early warning signs, precancers feel like dryness. So a lot of men, especially as they lose hair over time, you'll feel like their forehead and their scalp is dry, but those are precancerous cells. And you could just imagine precancerous cells are cells that, one cell that kind of goes haywire, that's trying to grow really, really fast to take the place of normal skin. And it feels like dryness or extra skin. So that's the earliest sign. But the biggest thing is basal cell cancer. One in five people will get a basal cell cancer. It doesn't look scary. It looks like a pimple that won't go away. Very slow growing. It could take 3 or 4 years to look like a pencil eraser. So very subtle. So I always tell people, if you have something on your skin, like a pimple that lasts longer than a month, a bump that doesn't look like anything else, you need to get it checked. I call it the ugly duckling. So if you have something, you can't find a matching spot. Okay, Lynn has something for me to look at. So it's really, it doesn't look ugly. It doesn't look scary. It's usually a skin colored or shiny pink bump or pimple that just doesn't go away over time.
Well, Rod had one more question. Does alcohol make skin red?
Yeah, so it's really different for everyone, you know, and that's kind of the way the body works. That's why there's never any one treatment for everyone or any one cause for anything for anyone. So alcohol, some people are predisposed to getting what we call rosacea or adult acne from alcohol. It is a known trigger as well as the sun and other things. And it can make the face red, like a W.C. Fields nose or just a pimple here or there or just diffuse vessel growth in the center of the face is typically where we see it, the nose and the forehead. So if that's a trigger for you, it's probably something you need to avoid. There are treatments for rosacea, both topical and oral, that can be prescribed by the doctor. And you want to avoid the sun if you're predisposed to rosacea, and also use a moisturizer or sunscreen with the niacinamide we talked about in it. And you can get some of those over the counter.
That's so interesting. Okay, so I have to admit that when I see that big red bulbous nose, I always think it's a sign of an alcoholic. I call it the alcoholic nose. So is that an unfair assignment to someone who has a...
I think it is. Okay. I see enough people and their first thing is they say, I don't drink and why is this happening to me?
Oh.
Or I don't drink that much. And it's just, you know, Northern European descent tends to be more predisposed to this rosacea sort of thing. And it basically looks like acne in the central part of the face, but real red, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't get whiteheads and blackheads. It's more red bumps,
right.
Overgrowth of blood vessels, and sometimes overgrowth of the oil glands. And there's tons of treatments out there nowadays. Just talk to your dermatologist and get a start on it early. Figure out what your triggers are. I know for me, I have it. My trigger is going from very cold weather to near a fireplace. I'll look like
right.
A big red pumpkin. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, this leads me into just a tangential kind of question, but redness, those people who, you know, they just bike up a little hill and they just get so red, and then sweating. I know I have someone very close to me who sweats like crazy, and I've always wondered if there's any way of controlling that, just that profuse sweating.
If it's diffuse, not really. That's just, I think it's a healthy response.
I do mean, too.
Sweat is a way we get rid of toxins in our body, you know? So I think sweat is great. If somebody has focal sweating to their hands or under their arms, there's lots of treatments. There's oral medications you could do. There's topical medicines, over-the-counter prescription. And we also do Botox to these areas. But if it's everywhere, that's just their genetic predisposition. Obviously, they want to make sure they don't have a thyroid problem or something like that underlying it all. But if it's something they've always grown up having, it's just their genetic predisposition, and I think it's healthy.
Hey, listener Sarah from Decatur, Georgia, is interested, are there beneficial effects to the skin from tea tree oil?
Yeah, tea tree. So I love all this stuff. I'm sort of like a holistic doctor. I love tea tree oil. I think it's actually in a diffuser at my house right now. But there was a great study with tea tree oil a few years ago looking at tea tree oil for athlete's foot. And what they found was that tea tree oil worked just as good, if not better, than some of the antifungal medications for athlete's foot. But what people developed was a contact allergy, sort of a poison ivy-like reaction to it. And that's why it's not really in use. So there are beneficial effects as far as it being antiviral, antifungal, antibacterial. Tea tree has a lot of those properties. But if you're one of those people that develops that poison ivy type of contact dermatitis to it, then it's not for you. And you can use it for years and then all of a sudden develop it. So just be aware.
And finally, listener Anonymous from Park City wants to know, what are the best ways to eliminate under-eye darkness?
So there's a few causes of under-eye darkness. So it kind of depends on what the cause is for you. Some people have a genetic predisposition where they just have very thin skin there and a lot of vessels that are obvious, and that's what's causing the darkness. And that's a difficult situation. Sometimes people will have fillers placed there to kind of separate the vessels from the skin. Another cause is pigmentation. So if you're one of those people that suffers from allergies and constantly rubbing their eyes, you might develop a little bit of pigmentation there, and you can use lightening creams to help treat that. So those are the two main things. And then bags, sometimes people will confuse with under-eye darkness, and that can be treated with some elastic tightening creams for the eyes if it's really mild, or you might need surgery or a laser to tighten the skin if that's another cause. So not an easy answer. Lots of different causes. Once again, there's not one treatment for everyone.
Wow, we have so many questions. We could talk to you for hours. I do have one final question. You know, that we in healthcare in general, there are lots of trends and fads, and now I'm noticing glycolic acid everywhere. Is it all that it's cracked up to be? And if so, I've seen it. You can take it both internally. Is it glycolic acid? Is that what I'm talking? That's the.
I haven't.
Yeah, I have. I think I saw some capsules or something that you can take, or you can put it on superficially. Is it?
Glycolic gas has been around a long time, and we've used it for acne patients. We've used it for wrinkles for a long time. I don't love it in dry environments because it tends to be a little bit drying. I do like it for the bumps in the back of the arms that people get on the back of the upper arms. It's called keratosis pilaris. There is a product called Glytone that has a moisturizer with glycolic acid. I like it for that. But as someone who struggles with rosacea, it's not good for rosacea. Salicylic acid, I think, is better for rosacea and anti-inflammatory properties, and it's also better for oily skin. So in older women who have acne that also have sensitive skin, I tend to go more towards salicylic acid than glycolic acid. But anything that's going to kind of separate the skin cells, exfoliate them off, is going to send signals to recharge the motors at the base of the skin to make new skin. And it's going to help turn over the skin and bring fresh skin to the surface. So, I mean, all of those glycolic or salicylic or lactic acids are going to have some sort of benefit in the right person.
Dr. Jennifer Haley, she is here for the summer, enjoying Park City. She has offices in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Montrose, Colorado. And we're so glad that you could join us. And you might have to come back because we didn't even broach the subject of really exfoliation. We'll do that next time.
Sounds great.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
Dr. Haley.
Thanks.
And we'll be back after these words. We're going to talk with Allison Page of Trail Talk about what it's like to, well, walk on trails and talk and figure out life's deepest questions when we return.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Dave Cushing.
Hello.
My co-host. And we were just speaking with Dr. Jennifer Haley. You can find her, I think the easiest way is to go to LinkedIn and find her. And that's where she puts up her blog post and her articles and things like that. She's a Park City part-time resident. And that was really interesting. I hope that we asked all the questions that our listeners were pondering as we spoke to her.
We'll do a follow-up sometime because it's so important to all of us.
I know. Covered with it. And we didn't get a chance to have her examine all of our various spots, did we?
And we didn't get a chance to play Alan Sherman's great song, You Gotta Have Skin. More later on that. I'll play it on my show this afternoon.
Okay. Just kidding. Well, anyone who has found themselves alongside a friend hiking, running, or biking on a Park City trail knows that there's a ton of informal therapy that goes on. But what if you were actually hiking alongside a trained professional? Well, joining us in the studio is Allison Page of Trail Talk. She is a trained professional, and so is her staff that actually meets people at trailheads and does this. It's a wonderful practice, and we're glad that she can join us for the Mountain Life. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. We've talked to you before, and I think I probably asked you, you know, right in the beginning, what happens to us when we all know about that endorphin thing that we get from being outside and getting exercise, maybe even it's an elevated heart rate that tends to make us start to talk a lot and delve into subjects we don't normally talk about when we're just sitting around. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. It is. So walking outside in nature, actually, there is a small release of endorphins, not like if you are running up a hill. So with Trail Talk, we call them signature walk and talks with a professionally trained therapist. And so as you walk side by side, there's a small release of endorphins that kind of decreases, I call it the emotional valence or level of intensity of a situation. So if you have something on your mind and it's causing you a lot of emotional angst, as you walk side by side, there's this bilateral movement back and forth, and you gain a little bit of clarity. So when you drop the emotional valence or intensity, then you gain clarity. So I have this tagline that I trademark called move your body, clear your mind. Mm-hmm. And so that's really true. So you think about when you're out with your friends hiking, you're talking about an issue, and by the time you're done, it's like, you know, I feel better about it because the emotional part of it, the issue drops and clarity comes and you have a chance to really think about it from different perspectives.
Oh, that is so interesting. Well, also, I was pondering once about on this topic, like, why is it so easy to get to that point of conversation? And then I was also thinking that you're usually not looking into someone else's eyes, and that should be how we, you know, that should be a way to open us up. But mm-hmm. there's something about not having to look at the person mm-hmm. and knowing that the person is actually doing something else at the same time you're talking to them. They're walking up the trail. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. So a lot of the clientele, the niche demographic that I'm really focusing on are people like us, active functional folks, that they're like, well, I'm not sick enough to go into a therapy office. And a lot of people still think therapy is Freudian, that you lay on a couch or, you know, it's very intimidating, especially with males and teens. And that intermittent eye contact that walking and talking affords you. So when we're out walking and talking, we can have intermittent eye contact. That also develops a sense of trust. So if you walk into an office, you're sitting with a therapist and you maintain intense eye contact for an hour. Well, a lot of times people have intrusive thinking, especially young boys, and they got these thoughts of like, oh my God, can she read my mind? And sometimes I trick people and say, oh, did I tell you that I was clairvoyant? Yeah, because I mean, it's kind of intimidating to be looking someone in the eyes like that you've just met. So walking and talking affords intermittent eye contact, and over time, trust builds so that you can increase your eye contact. And some people aren't very good at eye contact, and that's okay. It may be a social skill they need to learn, a young adult that's having social cueing issues. So it really is a great opportunity. And sometimes when you're thinking, it's really hard to look at someone because you're in your head or you're feeling something. So, yeah, that's another component of walk and talk therapy that works really well.
It's like trying to get a dance party started in bright lights. Lower lights, less inhibition, less eye contact, sometimes less inhibition.
Yeah,
let me ask you this. Is walk therapy, trail therapy part of a national trend, or are you alone in this?
Well, that's a great question. Walk and talk therapy isn't new. People, you know, think about wilderness therapy. It's very experiential. So when I first came up with this idea to develop Trail Talk. I've trademarked Trail Talk. I'm trying to grab a hold of a niche demographic. I got a brand. I actually found someone online. I Googled Walk and Talk back in 2010, and there's this really cool therapist in Central Park, and he started walking in Central Park. He was like, I love this. I've lost 50 pounds. I do solution focus. I got this really unique group of clients that are in the film industry right down in Central Park. And so I talked to, I called him Clay, and he's in New York. So if you just walk and talk therapy in New York City, he'll come up. And so after I talked to him, I thought, you know, I'm going to do the same thing. And I actually woke up one morning, it's like Trail Talk. And then I trademarked it right away. And so what I'm trying to do is be the CrossFit of the emotional care arena. And I don't want to, I'm using CrossFit because or Starbucks, where it's a prescribed plant. When you go into a store, you know what you're going to get. And the same thing with Trail Talk, the brand. There's also a Trail Talk Provo. So a young woman from New Jersey found me on the website, on my website 3 years ago, and she says, I need to come out there and work with you. And it's like, come on, come replicate my process. And so she came out and she opened Trail Talk Provo. And so Megan and I work in Park City, but she also has a business in Provo.
Does that mean this is a franchisable opportunity?
Absolutely. So I want to share the joy. I can't live without being outdoors. I grew up on the East Coast, and when I moved west, it's like, how come no one told me there was sun every day? So now it's like, I have to be outside and talk about sunscreen, being a redhead with freckles. I got to wear a lot of sunscreen. But I want to share this, and there are a lot of therapists that love nature, and then we can combine that with our craft, our practice. On the other hand, Megan has a very different style of, she has a different theoretical framework.
She's your associate?
Yeah. And so it's not, the therapist is really the relationship. That's 90% of a therapeutic relationship. It's really trusting the therapist. It's not the tools you use. What we're trying to do is use nature as our key or main therapeutic tool, and then we're very experiential. I do something called EMDR. I love psychodynamic. I really believe that the past can inform the future. And I do CBT and mindfulness. Megan does too, but she has a little different bent to it. She's younger. So again, it's the therapist first, and then the tools that you use second. So as far as Trail Talk goes, I want to normalize or make it so that we lend parity to emotional care. Park City, we slay our bodies in the day, self-medicate them at night, and our relationships don't get the same type of attention. Have you noticed that? You know, we're in an affluent community, high-performing people. And so I'm trying to appeal to that demographic.
Okay, we've just got to have you define those acronyms you used, EMDR.
Sorry.
And CBD.
No. Oh, CBT. Oh, EMDR. Oh,
CBD is another thing.
It's a therapeutic technique called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Francis Shapiro developed it about 35 years ago. The VA uses it as a form of care for returning vets for PTSD. So it's a trauma style of therapy. I just happen to really like it. Got trained in it years ago. CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. Been around a long time, very well researched, very effective with teenagers. And it's really changing how you think, so it changes how you feel, and how you behave. The same thing as you change your behavior, it'll change how you feel. Think it kind of goes in a circle in either direction. Our approach is you've got to give people, you got to fill their toolbox with self-regulating skills or mood state changing tools that are effective. So you mentioned alcohol in the last segment, and drugs and cigarettes and coffee and running excessively. Those are all mood state changers. Oh, feel great, you know, dopamine release, go to the reward system, we feel better. Well, sometimes we can't use those. And when we're in the day, what other kind of self-regulating tools do we have so that we can move from an anxiety state to a place of contentment and go into a meeting? So filling someone's toolbox with some of these self-regulating skills, and then you prepare them to do some other therapy work. Like, now, where did those messages come from? So how the past might be still informing their present. So there's two sides of it. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Allison Page of Trail Talk. You've seen those cool Sprinter vans around town with the beautiful wrap.
Yeah.
And so I know people know what it is.
Yeah.
You use those. I mean, do you meet people at trailheads or do you meet somewhere else and put them in their van and in your van? How does that
work?
Well,
we have offices. I did have an office in Salt Lake City last year, but I ended up getting very sick last year and I had to close it down. So unfortunately, that set me back a year. The van was intended to replace one of my offices in Park City. And inside, it's tricked out like a van. It is when people open it up, they have a smile on their face, and that's therapeutic in itself. And it's great. So I will oftentimes drive in the van with clients, and I have, if it's a teenager or someone under 18, I have a parent sign a waiver that Allison's going to be okay driving their child. Sometimes we meet at the trailhead, and I just walk from there. If it's inclement weather, I usually leave the door open, and I have a space heater like in a tent, and we leave our jackets on, and we have a pretty backdrop, and it's perfectly positioned. It's a joy. Plus, it's a Sprinter van, really fun to drive. And it's a roving billboard. And I think it's a very different for a therapist to be opening the doors of the therapy office to shed light on the shame and stigma of emotional care. And I have my peers are like, what are you doing? Nobody wants to know you're in therapy. And it's like, that's the point. That's the point. You should be proud that you're taking care of your emotional self and you're really trying to save your marriage or you're trying to improve how you do relationships. And you're walking with the best therapist in town.
Your website, trailtalk.com, talks about your model of care, which is branded Therapy Light. And you say you're joining an evidence-based research study to try and follow up on how this works. So what is Therapy Light per se, and what's the research study?
Well, I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse since 1980. And then I went into pediatrics and became a pediatric nurse practitioner. And I have this problem with learning. I have to keep going back to school, prove I'm smart or something. And then I went back and got a second master's in psychiatric nursing. And really, this whole concept of mind-body integration is nursing theory. It's Florence Nightingale. It's open up the windows, shed light, clean water, clean floors, positive attitude. And so that mind-body integration is our Therapy Light. And so I say nursing theory meets wilderness therapy. So the wilderness therapy community uses a tool called the outcome measurement tool. It's called the OQ, outcome questionnaire, developed by a psychologist at BYU. It's been around for years, but it's the industry standard for measuring outcomes in the wilderness therapy community. So I thought, well, I'm actually bringing wilderness therapy techniques into mainstream private practice. Why should we let wayward teens have all the fun? I think we need to all experience nature and experiential tools. And so my goal was, being in this field, we're moving, you know, mental health is moving into an evidence base, trying to quantify it instead of having it qualified. So I started using the OQ. And the OQ is a short tool that can help guide therapy. So when you say, how do I know I'm getting better? is, am I making changes? The OQ is something we use, and it helps you decide, oh my gosh, I am getting better. I think I've worked through this area. I think I want to focus on this. So it helps guide our therapy. And over time, I want to show that what Trail Talk is doing actually is impactful. It has data behind it.
Right. And speaking of impact, is there a way, or what are some ways to integrate inner work into your external regular exercise and outdoor activity routines? Is that a valid question?
No, we kind of rephrase it because I'm not following you.
Do you give people mental or mindfulness exercises or anything to use when they're not with you?
Yes. And I learned this through doing my own therapy. I think it's incredibly important to help people leave the office in a way that they can self-regulate. I've left therapy office just undone and had to go to a meeting. And it's like, oh my gosh, bad timing. I can't do therapy at noon when I have a 1 o'clock meeting or a presentation to do. And so I took from that, you know, clients really need to be able to, I'm empowering them. I can't do it for them. Everybody has the ability to change within them. And so I make sure we self-regulate before they leave. So if they're upset, it's like, let's do a mindfulness practice. And then Megan and I are both big into homework. It's like, work on this stuff at home, and you don't need to see me twice a week. And there are some styles of therapy that really do lend itself well to a couple times a week, you know, for intense trauma. Our approach is work on some things, own it, work on it, and then come back.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It
so does, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
And we really, in the therapy-like concept is really looking at people from their genetic loading perspective and their life event experiences. So nature, nurture. And that's the mind-body integration. They're all one. Our brain is an organ. It's not a it's not just a mind. So from the neck up, it's not all free will. There's an organ there. And so we really talk about have you had any blood work done? What are your labs? Are we missing anything medically? Low vitamin D can cause depression and anxiety. People that have a thyroid problem, it can drive anxiety. Low B12, fatigue. And when someone's fatigued, they get depressed. You know what I mean? It's a cyclical thing. So we make sure that we have medical involvement. So I call it a wellness triad. So if you come see a Trail Talk therapist, we want to make sure you have a medical provider and you've had updated labs. We're not missing anything medically. We're going to talk to you about substance use and how that might be impacting your mood and your sleep. And we really address lifestyle habits a lot.
This is great stuff. Well, we've got just 1 minute left, but you have this beautiful book that I'm looking at across the board here. Trails Talk, it looks like it says. What's that all about? A beautiful winter trail, which is, I have to say, is a little hard to look at right now,
yeah.
Allison.
Well, it goes,
I'm into summer.
I know. Well, it goes through all the seasons, so you can see some summer pictures.
Beautiful.
Well, Trails Talk is, I've been in Park City for about 30 years. I came from the East Coast, and I wasn't a child athlete. I've never a ski racer. And so Park City is kind of known for the hustle and bustle and the ski racing community. Well, there's another side to Park City, and you can go out on these trails and be, it's amazing. I can be out in the middle of the day alone on these beautiful trails. And so I thought, wouldn't it be nice to introduce Park City from a different perspective, that you can actually be in Park City. There's a lot going on, but you can get off onto these trails. So I happen to love to take photographs. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to combine a hobby with a walking meditation. So I've heard that some teachers are using it in the classroom and is teaching kids how to meditate.
Beautiful book, really is. Trails Talk, and our guest is Allison Page. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having
me. Thanks, Allison.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
I want to thank our underwriters, Davidson Orthopedics, Zions Bank, Park Meadows Country Club, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services.